it's Monday, the 13th of July, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier. Sirens have been blaring across the Gulf as Iran fires missiles at Bahrain, Jordan, Oman and Kuwait and claims to have closed the Strait of Hormuz. Joining me today from Bahrain, Ahmed Kouzaei, says now is not the time to back down. The US, Israel and the Gulf must work together to defeat Iran or forfeit any chance of peace and stability in the region. Hear our conversation in a moment, but first the latest. Oil prices have jumped more than 3% amid renewed fighting in the Gulf. Iran has been attacking its neighbours, including what it claims was a ballistic missile strike on a US airbase in Kuwait. Early this morning, the United States launched a new wave of strikes against Iran, targeting dozens of military sites across the country. The latest round of fighting was triggered by an IRGC attack on an oil tanker that was transiting the Strait of Hormuz. Washington says Tehran must give up control of the crucial waterway. Well, Iran says it is talking to mediators in Pakistan and Qatar, while at the same time ramping up its hostile rhetoric. The foreign ministry has issued a gloating statement following the death of US Senator Lindsey Graham. Foreign ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei declared that Azrael is just, a reference to the angel of death in the Islamic tradition. He said the senator's death would not be mourned by any free human being. Graham was much loved in Israel, and officials from across the political spectrum have offered their condolences. Newly released Hamas documents reveal that the October 7 mastermind Yahya Sinwar believed Israel might respond to a large-scale invasion with a nuclear strike on Gaza. The handwritten note, which was captured by the IDF, shows that despite fearing Israel could use what he described as all means at its disposal, including nuclear weapons, Sinwar still viewed the attack as a battle worth waging. The documents also shed light on Hamas's planning, including an early vision for a force of up to 10,000 fighters and a long-running strategy to deceive Israel into a false sense of security before the massacre. A new poll by Israel's national broadcaster Kan 11 shows former IDF Chief of Staff Gadi Eisenkot's newly launched Yashar Party is now the largest bloc with 24 seats. That's ahead of Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud Party, which has 23 seats. The same survey also found that Israelis now see Eisenkot as a more suitable Prime Minister than Netanyahu. Israel will hold elections on October 27th, the latest date allowed by law. The European Union is considering new trade restrictions targeting goods produced in Israeli communities in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria. Foreign ministers meeting in Brussels are discussing a possible import ban, with the EU's foreign policy chief Kaya Kallas calling the situation intolerable. Israel recently cut ties with Kallas's office over her criticism of Israel's policy in the territory. The United Kingdom is dramatically increasing security for its Jewish community after a wave of anti-Semitic attacks. The government says it will spend more than £250 million over the next 3 years, deploying 500 additional police officers to protect Jewish neighbourhoods, schools, synagogues and community centres. It follows a series of attacks, including the stabbing of two Jewish men in northwest London. Britain's terrorism threat level remains at severe. Jewish groups have welcomed what they call a long overdue move. Before we get to today's conversation, a reminder that you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now here's Ahmed Kouzaei. And Ahmed, you're very much in the thick of things. I think the sirens have been blaring, what was it, three times this morning in Bahrain, where you are. Is there a concern that this is becoming the new normal?
You are living in a new norm, something that started to happen since the beginning of this year, something that we never thought would go through.
There must be conversations going on right now about the long-term security, because countries like Bahrain, Kuwait and others are hosting these American air bases, the ones that the Iranians say they're targeting. I mean, they're there to keep the region safe. And right now, they're pretty much a liability, aren't they?
Once we understand why the American bases came to the region in the first place, we'll give ourselves an excuse of why we would like to retain them even more. In every country in the Gulf, it differs. But I mean, I'll take Kuwait as an example. The story of the American base in Kuwait dates back to 1987, when the oil vessel war started, when Iran was hijacking the Kuwaiti oil vessels. Anytime an oil vessel by the Kuwaitis touches the water of the Gulf, it was hijacked by the Iranians. They tried with the United Nations, they tried internationally, they tried mediators, nothing worked. Until they spoke to the Americans, and they brought in one vessel by the Americans, and the Iranians stopped. That's when the Kuwaitis started talking about retaining such a base. But they couldn't finish the negotiations since 1990, Iraq took over Kuwait. But right after that, they wanted to be sure that they are secure. And the story is replicated around the Gulf states for one reason or another. This is just one example. So why do we have American bases? It was because of the Iranians. That's why the Iranians have no say in who we deal with. I give you a historical background just for us to understand what's happening right now. Today, yes, they might seem like a liability, but let's look at it from our Gulf perspective for a second. Let's say tomorrow the Americans leave the region. We'll feel naked in front of the Iranians, right? They'll take advantage of that. So yes, there might be a liability on one or from one perspective, but as a whole, no, they're not.
So there's no conversations about turning towards other world powers like the Chinese, for example.
That was on the table for a long time. How can we turn to the Chinese who are taking the side of the Iranians? The Russians who are taking the sides of the Iranians, maybe the Europeans, but they are not as strong. And as well, they retain good relations with our enemies. So how does it work? It's not an easy equation, but we have to go through it.
This is all happening, of course, right in the middle of what is supposed to be a ceasefire before a final agreement between the United States and Iran. I mean, do you think those talks are even going to happen? It's hard to see how we can go back to that now.
It never was bounded to happen. Let's put it that way. The ceasefire, any ceasefire, when it happens or when it basically it's agreed upon, the main agreement starts with when. When does it start and for how long? So you have a start date and a finish date. That's not there in the ceasefire. I can't say even it's an agreement because nothing was signed. It was broken in less than 24 hours. The war did not stop. Since 28th of February until today, there was not a peaceful week. It's either Kuwait was hit or Qatar was hit or even Oman was hit. Even if it was a single attack, it violates the ceasefire. When it comes to the MOU, I'm very critical of the MOU for the same reasons. The terms kept on changing before, during, and after. It broke the ceasefire while the MOU is valid. It has no precautions. It has no penalties. Nothing is clear about it, which means it's not binding in any way.
What would you like to see the Americans do now, though? Would you like President Trump to say, you know, as he has already, you know, the ceasefire is over and really go in much harder on Iran? Or are you concerned that that could bring some significant blowback?
As a person in the region, just like you are, Laura, we have two paths to take. The first is a peaceful path. But can we deal with Iran to reach there? We've been trying to deal with them for the past 50 years at least, 47, but nothing worked. Although there was a status quo before 2026. That status quo was broken by the war. Fine, we are in it right now. Can we reach a peaceful deal? The Iranians showed us that this is not possible. We have the other option, which is aggressiveness. We have one of three ways to take. Number one is the United States of America and Israel continue what they started. Number two, the Gulf will get involved in these efforts, which there have been some leaks this week by some Israeli outlets suggesting that the Gulf states have participated in such attacks. And the third one is to basically call it a day and say we surrender, which nobody wants to see happening. If we are giving up to the Iranians today, we will lose peace in the region and then the world. Economy won't be the same and they will hijack the rest of the region.
So how do you see this playing out in the next few weeks, Ahmed?
I think while the Iranians are escalating, they'll escalate for now and then they'll ask for another deal. It won't happen. While the Americans need the time to finish the World Cup peacefully in order for them to go on a full throttle attack. Same thing, I think, with the Israelis. Everybody around the world feel that America and the United States are waiting for the elections to play out. I don't think that's the case because in order for the current administration in Israel to sustain is for them to continue the war, as well as for the United States, for the Republicans. If they stop the war right now, they won't look like the winners, and it will even put them more down. So it's better for them to continue the war. That's from the American and the Israeli side. For us in the Gulf, we can't be hijacked like that forever, not understanding what tomorrow will be like. So I don't think it will remain the same way. And I think we will have a full open war on our hands over the coming period.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching or listening. And please do subscribe using the link below. Goodbye.